Hello, my name's Don, and I'm going to be giving the children's story and the five-minute focus, so it's a two-for-one deal, and the children might be more comfortable staying where they are in their seats here. So, good morning and welcome to Children's Story and the five-minute focus. Today, I will read a couple stories from the book my dad wrote about growing up on the prairies and starting off as a new teacher. The book is called From Between the Tracks, as the farm my dad grew up on was next to a busy railroad line. He is the young guy waving at the train engineer. You can see the three grain elevators of the town of Glenbush to the left. Glenbush is a small town about 2 hours northwest of Saskatoon. These stories in the book are about the challenges of growing up in rural Saskatchewan and about life in general. The underlying theme of all these stories has to do with faith. Faith in God, so you know how to live a good life and to make good decisions. Faith in yourself, that yes, I can do this. And faith in the goodness of strangers. If you need someone to help you, if you need help, someone will help you, just as you would help someone else. As I read these stories, please listen for how faith plays a role in these stories and what we can learn from the faith of others. My dad, pictured here, grew up on a grain farm in Glenbush. He was the oldest in his family. He had four younger siblings, and they lived in a little house between the tracks. There were many other Mennonites in the area, and the church was an important part of their lives and the community. His parents, or my grandparents, raised him to love God and be a faithful person. From Sunday school lessons to life lessons on the farm, to stories around the supper table, my dad's faith grew. In 1942, my dad went to Rostern Junior College, or RJC. It was called the German English Academy back then. Like many people in our church, myself included, he left home at age 15 to attend RJC, a Mennonite high school in a different town. He did well at school, and his faith was encouraged. The idea of becoming a teacher was growing all through the 3 years he spent at RJC. When he graduated from RJC, he knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a teacher. The fall of 1945, when my dad was 19 years old, he enrolled in Teachers College. It was called Normal School back then. After the Christmas break at Teacher College, the principal, Dr. Anderson, called my dad into the office. He told my dad that he was doing very well at school, and he also mentioned that there was a school without a teacher, and would he consider being a teacher at this particular school starting immediately. He could finish his formal training later. So that takes a little bit of faith, I think. The school was in the community of Northvale, not far from where he grew up. My dad was told that the community had some challenges, and the school and the teacherage, the house that was provided for the teacher, had been vandalized and some damage had been done. Dr. Anderson continued by saying, "It will be a difficult situation, and I'm confident you can handle it." Then he asked my dad, "Are you up for a challenge?" And he answered, "Yes." So the very next weekend, travel arrangements were made to meet the chairman of the board, his future boss, of Northvale School at the Mullingar train station. Northvale School was a one-room school with all 38 students from grade 1 to grade 12 in the same room with only one teacher. Classroom size was an issue back then, too. I would like to share a story my dad wrote about his arrival to this community of Northvale and their school. So I'll read the story called I Meet the Chairman of the Board. The temperature was minus 35 degrees. It was a cold January day. The short trip from Glenbush to Mullingar seemed long. I was very excited and apprehensive of what lay ahead. Maybe Mother was right that I was too young to be a teacher. The CN diesel that we had dubbed the Skunk pulled into the Mullingar station. I got off and wondered how I would recognize the chairman of the board. Half a dozen teams of horses were parked beside the station platform. The steam from the horse's nostril and the smoke from the chimneys of the cabooses went straight up. The farmers were picking up empty cream cans and egg crates. Some just visited and watched the trainmen unload the express. I saw them unload my trunk and put it on the baggage wagon. To my right, a man was standing by himself, smoking and watching for someone. Could this be the chairman? Taking a deep breath, I walked toward him and asked, "Are you Mr. Funk, chairman of Northvale School?" He nodded. I shook hands with him, giving him my name. I was surprised that he was the chairman. He just looked like the other farmers on the platform. He was wearing a cloth cap with ear flaps, a big Mackinaw jacket, felt boots, and a homemade cigarette was hanging from his lower lip under a nicotine-stained mustache. It seemed that I had to do all the talking. He was disappointed in me. Was he disappointed in me? I thought that he was not very friendly, but I could not figure out why. Perhaps it was his nature to be quiet. I thought that I had been friendly and enthusiastic. He told me that he was also the postmaster at Northvale, and every Saturday he had to pick up the week's mail. The Mullingar Post Office collected the Northvale mail. He beckoned me to his rig. It was a caboose with sort of a rumble seat in the back where he carried all his mail, the groceries, a few oat sheaves for the horses, and some wood for the heater in the caboose. I told him I had a trunk to take along. He stopped walking and said, "A trunk?" "Yes, it's over there on the wagon." He walked over. He stood silently for a moment, then said, "It's too big. Too heavy for the horses. I can't take it along." I was dumbfounded. "Everything I need is in it. My clothes, my books, everything," I said. He was insistent that it was too big and too heavy for the horses. I was insistent too, and told him that I needed the material for his teaching, for my teaching. After some contemplation, he helped me carry it to the sleigh. We moved a few sheaves, and there was no problem getting it into the box of the sleigh, and there was ample room for his mailbag and all the other things he had to take along. The reason for his reluctance in wanting to take my trunk came out after we had driven a few miles in silence. In 1945, the federal government introduced the family allowance payments to families with children 16 years old and under. It was to help parents buy food and clothing for their children. To qualify for this allowance, children had to be in regular attendance at school. If the teacher reported the children absent for 4 days or longer for unacceptable reasons, the checks were cut off. Funk's reasoning was that if they could not get a teacher, then the government would not penalize them for cutting off family allowance. So maybe that was like getting gold without wisdom, I don't know. He himself was not opposed to school, but many in the community were, and Funk knew their views. He felt that when I saw the school and the teacherage, I would pack up and leave, so why bother taking the trunk? So it was already dark when we arrived at the Funk's yard. There was a small log building, part of which was the Northvale post office. I helped him unhitch his team of horses. He hurried to carry the mailbag into the post office because he had a yard full of farmers waiting for their mail. When he finished sorting and handing out the mail, he came out. I asked him, "Where am I supposed to stay?" He said, "There is no place. Nobody wants to board the teacher." This came as a shock. Finally, he said, "I could stay for a few days in the room behind the post office. It had a dirt floor, a small space heater or a wood stove, and a metal cot with an old mattress and several horse blankets on it. There was no table, no chair, no dresser. It was a room with just the bare essentials. It was desperately cold, and I had no choice. I moved my trunk inside and started a fire in the heater. If nobody wanted to board the teacher, where would I stay? I hadn't had anything to eat since breakfast. The future looked bleak. Funk went into his house, and I went to check on the fire that I had made. I met one of Funk's sons who was in the post office in case some more people would come for their mail. Half hour later, Mr. Funk invited me to come to the house and have supper. This was encouraging. I was introduced to the other members of the family. My being there seemed to hamper the conversation since everyone seemed to be unusually quiet. After supper, Mr. Funk asked his son, Abe, to light a lantern for me, and together we went to my studio. Abe added a few pieces of wood to the fire, and it was still very cold in the room. When he left, I warmed myself by standing close to the stove. I kept it well stoked, and then I held the horse blankets near the stove to warm them before going to bed. After a while, it got warmer, but not warm enough to take off my parka. After opening my trunk, I began to make some plans for the first day of school. I went to bed wearing my parka and pants, and I put the hood over my fur hat. Needless to say, I woke up several times during the night and piled more wood into the stove. I survived that first night. It was Sunday. I decided to get a key for the school and prepare for Monday morning. I walked along the road to the corner and 1 mile straight south. There, amid the poplars, stood a log school, and a short distance to the southwest stood what I assumed was the teacherage. The windows were broken, and it looked forlorn. I stood for a moment just to take in the scene. The school had two small windows on the east side. They were up high. To the north were two biffies, surprisingly in the upright position. I walked to the front door of the school porch. Two steps were broken, and the outside door was open. I unlocked the inside door. I stood there, and I couldn't believe what I saw. Never in my life had I seen such a primitive classroom. I began to wonder if the chairman of the board had been right after all. Did he think I would take one look, come back, and ask him to take me back to the station in Mullingar? Then I recall what Dr. Anderson's remarks to me a few days ago. Mr. Epp, it will be a challenging position, but I know you can handle it. There I stood there traumatized. What do I do now? On the west wall, there was a bank of unbroken windows. There was plenty of light. Near the back of the room stood a 45-gallon drum made into a stove, and the pipes went to the ceiling and stretched all the way through the center of the room to the front, where they connected with the chimney. The pipes were held up with wire loops. In some places, they hung lower, giving them a zigzag appearance. I walked into the room. The floor creaked. Some boards were broken, and I could see straight down to the frozen ground below. The walls were plastered, but somehow it did not look very sound. There were five long rows of two-seater desks. They were handmade and well used, and many were broken. The teacher's desk was old, but in fair condition. As I stood behind the desk, I looked at the classroom and saw all those desks. My mind visualized them filled with children. Smithville School, where I'd done my practice teaching, had only half as many children. How would I manage so many pupils? What about books and supplies? The primitive shelves were empty, almost empty. At the bottom, there were a few readers and some texts. I went to the back and lit a fire in the stove. A start had to be made. Once my fire was burning well, I went back to the chairman's house to borrow a hammer and a saw and some nails. If I were to start school the next day, the steps, the floor, the desk would have to be repaired. This became my priority. For the rest of the day, I was a repairman. However, before I returned to the Funks, I prepared a few lesson plans so I could make a good start in the morning. I found the lid of an old shoebox, which I folded in half so that it would stand up, and on one side I wrote, "My work is my prayer. I sing the whole day long, as faith and beauty shape the students I teach." This became my motto for the balance of my teaching career. In spite of all the difficulties, I made up my mind that nobody, not even the chairman of the board, would drive me away. These 38 children that were coming tomorrow morning needed me. I had made my decision, and I was determined to carry it through. As you can see, the students learning on the blackboard there that my dad settled into his role as the teacher. He spent 2 years at this school. So I'd like to share one more story from my dad's time teaching at Northvale, and this was called Stranded in Mullingar. So I don't know if anyone's been to Mullingar, but you don't want to be stranded there. So, good intentions do not always bring rewards. I learned this the hard way in my first year as a teacher in Northvale, June 1946. One of the things that I discovered when I taught in this community was that the children had very little contact with the outside world. Over half of my students had never been to Mullingar and had never seen a grain elevator. They had never left their own town or their farm. When the Medstead School Unit set out dates for the various field meets in the division, I asked my students if they'd ever participated in a field day. The reply was negative, and I asked them if they would like to go, and the reply came in a chorus of yeses. I had to find out how I could transport 38 students to Mullingar. It was only 14 miles, but the roads were poor, and only one parent, Mr. Clausen, had an old Model T ton truck, possibly an antique. I decided to go see him. I explained what I had in mind, and I wondered whether he would be willing to take us to Mullingar in his truck. He agreed to do this for $10. The next day, I told the children. Excitement ran high. I impressed on them that if we were to take part in the field day, we would have to get out and practice some running and jumping, which they did willingly. Fortunately, the day of the field day was beautiful and sunny. We all climbed onto the back of the truck. I stayed in the back with the children to see that nobody would fall off or try any tricks. On the way, we passed the old Ringleton Furs brick house that had been built during the early 1900s, and we saw the Mullingar elevators and the CN station. It was a bumpy ride, but enjoyable. Upon our arrival, Mr. Clausen dropped us off at the gate to the sports grounds. I showed the children where their events would take place, and I paid no more attention to Mr. Clausen. I assumed he would go to the store and post office while we got going with our events. When it was time to go back, I gathered the students at the gate where we had been dropped. We waited, but there was no truck. Then one of the students casually remarked that Mr. Clausen wasn't coming back. Apparently, he didn't want to pay the 25 cents entrance fee and had gone home. I was not aware of this. I would have gladly paid his way. That was nothing compared to the $10 I had already given him. What should I do? I was stranded in Mullingar with 38 students. We couldn't walk back. Although I had done it many times, I told the children to wait and I would go downtown to see if I could make arrangements for transportation back to Northvale. First, I went to the McLeod store and told Ian, the owner of the store, about my dilemma. He was willing to help me. He suggested I go to Walker's Cafe and Cowell's store as well. I did. And they all agreed to help. Fortunately, Mr. Walker had a van, so that meant we could squeeze all the children into the three vehicles, and nobody would have to make two trips. The children got back safe and sound, and I had done my job. However, I wondered for some time why I took on all this responsibility. It ended up being a good experience. The children had seen elevators. They had participated in a field day. Stranded in Mullingar will always remain in my memory as one of the most harrowing experiences of my career. Fortunately, it did not dampen my enthusiasm for teaching. I stayed in the profession for 40 years. So as you heard in the first story, my dad had a motto for his teaching career. My work is my prayer. I sing the whole day long as faith and beauty shape the students I teach. It took a lot of prayer, singing, observation of beauty around him, and faith to be the kind of person and teacher he was during the hard times in rural Saskatchewan. Faith in God, faith and trust in yourself, and faith in the kindness of others are all part of my dad's story and are reminders and valuable lessons to us, or for us, today. So thank you for this opportunity to share these stories.